lot to be about, yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. And so the curtain came down on the domestic season on Sunday. Shamrock Rovers supporters revelling in Cup glory. Dundalk have to settle for a League and League Cup double. Finn Harps retained their spot in the Premier Division with a 2-0 second leg win over Drogheda. And Wexford Youths retained the Women's FAI Cup with a 3-2 win over League Champions Peamount. Quite a thriller at the Aviva on Sunday. To rake over the weekend and chat Premier Division Team of the Year and Player of the Year 2019, we're joined by Ed Leahy from RT Online. James O'Toole, as ever, from Soccer Republic, and Alan Cawley and Johnny McDonald, our pundits, are also here. The lads will give their moments of the year, and we'll chat through the team of the year as well. But we can only start with Ed Leahy. One place to start: FAI Cup glory for Shamrock Rovers. Surprised to even see you here today.
Purely professional. Look,
he has a litre of water in front of me, lads.
In body.
That's an eco-friendly water flask, you know. Look, it was great. It was great for the club. It was just a super, super occasion. It's been 32 years in the making. And just to talk to so many people who I've been going to games with for 20 years, and some of these lads had never seen a cup victory. They'd never been, whether they started a bit going to Rovers a bit later or whatever, and they were like, for them, they were even more, you know, they were so emotional, and I've never thought it would happen. Like, for me, I'm always more about the league. If we win the league, then the cup is a bonus. But, you know, just to see it all yesterday, and it really only hit home when I went down for a look at the march coming up from Ringsend, and I couldn't get over it.
Explain to people who wouldn't be familiar with the march and the White Horse. What's the White Horse all about?
Yeah, well, I always thought the White Horse was just a pub near Tower Street, you know. But,
you're probably there last night.
No, it's gone now. It's gone. Did it turn into a Starbucks? I'm not sure. Or any other coffee establishment.
Of your choice.
Good and bad.
But no, look. Yeah, tradition will tell you, but you know, some of Rovers' traditions could be a little bit sketchy. Even going back to the date the club was founded, was it 1899, was it 1901? But I'm reliably told that, you know, it was always tradition on cup final day to march behind the White Horse to the venue. It happened in 2010 for the Sligo match. It was a horse of some description that day. A bit more pedigree in yesterday's beast, as they say. But I was literally bowled over by what came over the hill at Ringsend Bridge.
I've seen it on video. It's unbelievable. It's like an army. It's brilliant.
That is
it's
brilliant,
absolutely
yeah.
brilliant.
To the cup final itself, Alan, Shamrock Rovers, no doubt about it, deserving winners. I mean, albeit on penalties, they got over the line in the end, and penalty kicks can go either way. But when you look at the full 90 minutes, the extra time, they shaded it, didn't they?
I think even more than shaded it, to be honest with you. And I felt they were fully deserving winners. They played ever so well, particularly in the first half. I was a little bit worried maybe at half-time, the fact that they had so much dominance but didn't capitalise and score. But they came out and played really well then again in the second half. And obviously the drama that we had then, I felt they reacted really well, because I thought Duffy scoring and the circumstances that he did, and it was such an unbelievable moment that I felt that could kill Shamrock Rovers and they'd be really deflated for extra time. But they reacted really well to that as well. They were fairly dominant in extra time without maybe creating too many chances, and obviously there was a lot of tired legs. But over the course of the full 120 minutes, they were fully deserving. They were the better team, and fully deserved on today.
Your thoughts, Johnny?
Just from where Ed was talking about, from the start of the day, I was over at the ground early. The atmosphere around the place, even for the women's match, it was good atmosphere around the place. Brilliant day, I have to say. It was brilliant. The fans were brilliant. The you know, I was saying the other day, I think the winner would be on Sunday was that the two teams are so easy on the eye, and both teams can play, and they can play some brilliant and exciting football. And I thought the football was brilliant yesterday, and the atmosphere in the place, it was, you know, you're talking about highlights of the year. I thought yesterday was a highlight of the year for me, that we have the product, you know, here. The players were there yesterday. The best players were on show yesterday, and they played. They got the ball down and they played. There were some great phases of play, some great individual stuff, and the Duffy goal was a brilliant goal as well. But the fans, both sets of fans played a huge part. Mm. And you know what I think? I think we need to rent them out for the match against Denmark so we can get the players. It was brilliant.
The Shamrock Rovers fans, the showing they had, and it looked unbelievable. In fairness, they really came out in their numbers, and obviously all the flags and everything. It looked amazing behind the goals, to be fair to Shamrock Rovers fans.
I couldn't believe when Dundalk got the goal, you know. I just said, oh no, you know, great for Dundalk, obviously, but for Rovers, you know, they celebrated so much, probably too much.
Alan,
but you need to have fellas there. It's still on, the match is still alive, and what's alive, you know?
It was unbelievable.
It was brilliant.
Particularly Duffy, the fact that he played so poorly, probably the poorest I've seen him play.
But do you not
I was disappointed with Dundalk overall.
Did you not think because they didn't give him enough of the ball? I looked at early doors, and he ran Joey O'Brien a couple of times, took him on the outside, took him on the inside, and I said Joey O'Brien's going to have a hard day here.
Joey O'Brien had a great game,
and then he stopped giving him the ball, Alan.
Well, I think, like I'm saying, Dundalk were poor, and I hear what you're saying, that they stopped giving him the ball. I think that was largely down to the fact that they pressed him so hard, Shamrock Rovers, and Shields as well obviously was huge in terms of Sean Hoare, as good and all a player he is, centre half, he won't go back and receive the ball and take it off the back four and start the attacks like Shields was. And there was so many times in the first half, Dave Massey at times was throwing his hands up that he's looking for that option, maybe inside or up the line, where Shields would always offer himself. Hoare never did. He was basically in there just to stop and be a protector. In terms of offensively on the ball, he offered absolutely, and I'm mad about him as a centre half, but just in that position. So people think you lose Chris Shields because of the defensive side of things. I thought they missed him massively in possession of the ball yesterday, because he's the one that always offers himself and starts the attacks, and that was sadly missing for them.
There was probably more emphasis on his job, maybe just to keep Jack Byrne quiet, which I thought he did. The collective. I thought they collectively looked after Jack Byrne quite well, even though he had his moments and he played some really insight.
James
really
O'Toole has been very quiet so far. James, there's no treble for Dundalk.
No, there's no treble for Dundalk.
So Derry remain the only side.
You're delighted.
Still safe. But I think what the lads are all saying, I think from the get-go, as soon as the whistle was blown, it was obvious the Shamrock Rovers were going to try and get on the front foot and get in the faces of Dundalk and not do what they've done in matches this season. Let them have it for 5 or 10 minutes, then come into it for 10 minutes and drop out again, drop in and out like they've done to league games against them this year. They were at it from the very, very start. There was 2 or 3 players that could have got man of the match yesterday in that Shamrock Rovers team. Obviously Pat gave it to Pico at the back, but there's 2 or 3 players that could have got man of the match. They all stuck to their jobs, they all kept up. The pace was phenomenal. I don't, like, you guys were at it, I was here obviously working on it for Soccer Republic, but the pace of the game seemed immense on a big pitch. And I thought, you know what, 20 minutes ago, Rovers here will drop off and that'll give Gap.
You have to look at the team selection, even. Like, if you look at that midfield, when he went for O'Neill instead of
Bulger.
I think that was a statement. Just said this is
was going forward.
Football.
But I think he's saying, Ed, sorry, I think that's what he's thinking about going forward, because I thought O'Neill was brilliant yesterday in the stuff that he done, the simple stuff. You know, Jack Boone was all lively and all that. I thought O'Neill and McInniff, they're 2 players he's going to have in the future going forward.
I thought Aaron
they're
going to
be
brilliant.
2 really, really top midfielders.
I thought Aaron was brilliant. A lot of Derry fans would have given Aaron a bit of criticism over the time with coming into games and dropping off. And if the game isn't up for him, he's not in the game. But yesterday,
he's had a great season, Aaron McInniff.
Everything for them.
Let's not forget his injury.
Yeah, exactly.
Coincided with Rovers dipping forward.
Yeah. When I looked at, in fairness to Stephen Bradley as well, tactically, playing the wing backs and the 3 at the back, I felt there was real opportunity to be exploited in the negative side of that formation, in the gaps behind with obviously Duffy. And I thought what was going to happen a lot of the time was you'd have Dave Massey and Duffy nearly a 2v1 against Finn. And Finn
bombarding.
Would be
but
it was actually the opposite, because the press so high, it was allowed the back 3 to be so high up the pitch that everybody else was. And it became that Ronan Finn, if you watch it, there was times we were saying we were high up and we were watching it, he was basically up on top of Dave Massey. He was the right wing back, but he was almost playing as just the right out and out right winger, which was allowing Joey O'Brien to be up here. And everybody was up, they were up the pitch, and just Dundalk couldn't get out. They just couldn't get out.
There was a couple of balls yesterday to come into the box, to the back post of the box, and Finn was there standing on the edge of the 18-yard box for every one of
and
them.
And his energy
in.
Levels, to be fair to him, Finn, he never stopped yesterday. At one stage, he went down, I think it was an extra time of cramp. And he signalled line going off. 10 minutes later, he's still closing fellas down on the far side.
But did you notice the one time that I noticed Dane Massey actually get forward in the first half? 20 seconds later, Burke was played into all that straight away. And, you know, he was gone, and it was acres.
It's a bit like the Liverpool scenario where they know the fullbacks are bombing on, and that's where you exploit them down the channels.
Alan, you've been critical in the past of Stephen Bradley and the project. This win for him as a manager, what's it going to do for him, both personally and indeed for the club, Shamrock Rovers having finally landed some silverware?
Yeah, well, I think, to be fair to Stephen, from a personal point of view, I think it was needed. They've been there now 3 years. He's been there. They've been slowly closing the gap. I wouldn't say it's been at a rapid pace, but every year there has been improvements, and particularly this year, I felt it's obviously been his best team, but I just feel if you look at the improvements in terms of the goals that they've conceded, it's gone from, they've halved, there was only 21 goals conceded this year, whereas in Stephen's first year it was 41. I think that's largely down to obviously the form of the back four, but massively down to Alan Manus, and that was the major gripe that I had with Stephen Bradley at the time when I was critical of them, was that he was playing goalkeepers that were just nowhere near the level of a Shamrock Rovers or a team that's trying to overtake Dundalk. They addressed that issue, and you look at the difference in them now since Manus has come in, he's been absolutely brilliant, and as he was again yesterday. And just for it going forward, to be honest with you, Adrian, I think it's good for the league as well. We need, because you look at Cork, they've fallen away now. Cork will be nowhere near challenging for a league next year. We need a Shamrock Rovers, a good Shamrock Rovers challenge in Dundalk, because we need somebody challenging them. And I think the belief that yesterday will give them, because in fairness to them, in the four games they've played them, I know the results will say they've lost three and they've only drawn one. And that's where they've fallen down, really, because the games against Bohemians, it's been something similar. And they've only picked up 4 points out of 24. So they'll have to address that next year over a league campaign. But I think the win yesterday, because in the games so far that they've played in the league games, if you watch them all back, they were fairly dominant in a lot of the games without getting the result. Whereas yesterday, getting over the line and being so dominant in that game, the belief that will give them now next year that they've obviously beaten them. Going forward, they have to put up a serious title challenge now next year. That's the next step. Okay, I think they will.
Yeah, we'll get Johnny's thoughts on that in just a few moments. But Alan, you mentioned there one of the Shamrock Rovers heroes of yesterday and a key player this season, named in the PFA Ireland Team of the Year 2019. Alan Manus, the goalkeeper. I caught up with him just after the full-time whistle.
The last time I played here was 2010 when for Shamrock, and we got beaten penalties against Sligo. And it was difficult to take after the game in the changing room. I don't remember much about the game back then, but I remember being in the changing room after just with a sense of disappointment. So, you know, I was determined to try and do my part, play my part in putting that right tonight. But more importantly, it was just about us winning the game, winning the cup for the supporters who've been excellent for us, as they always are, no matter where we go. You can see how many were here today making noise throughout the whole game. So, but I thought we played really well and we dominated the game. Dundalk have been excellent this year in the league. Been the best team in the league, but now we've been the best team in the cup.
I'm sure you prepared for all eventualities, and as a goalkeeper you would have prepared for penalty kicks. The psychology of a penalty shootout, have you worked on that yourself as a goalkeeper?
I've been in quite a few because I'm quite old, I guess. Been playing first team football for nearly 20 years, so I've been fortunate that I've been in cup games where you get taken the penalties and I've won a few and I've lost a few, so nothing beats experience. In saying that, I thought, you know, Gary's been in quite a few as well. I imagine he's been in a lot. So, but you said about homework there, and yes, we did a lot of homework. The goalkeeper coach, Jose, at the club, I'd done a lot of work with him, homework on their penalty takers, and I had a good idea where they were going. I was disappointed with the first one that I went the wrong way because I thought I knew where he was going, but obviously it was wrong. I think I went right for the other ones and saved one and nearly got the other one, but our penalties were unbelievable and we practiced them. And as I say, a lot of credit to Jose from my point of view, our goalkeeper coach, who's been excellent to work with. And I've never seen a goalkeeper coach put as much time and effort into goalkeeping coaching and making sure he does everything that he can to help his goalkeepers. So a lot of credit to Jose.
And it wasn't just about the penalty shootout, because he made some important saves during the course of the match itself, and indeed an extra time, that late chance that fell the way of Georgie Kelly. You got a hand to it to shovel the ball to safety.
Yeah, I just got my fingertips to it, and thankfully I kept it out. Gary Rogers made a great save in the first half. He got his fingertips to one, touched it over the bar, and I think it got given as a goal kick, so he probably didn't get the credit for it, but you could see in the replay he touched it. Apart from that, I think there was a header in the first half, and then another one quite low down here, which is quite comfortable. Obviously, we were so disappointed with them scoring in the last minute, and if we hadn't won, then maybe we'd be we would have been obviously kicking ourselves, and I'd have find it maybe hard mentally to deal with that, and thinking should I have done this and that and whatever. And it's part of being a goalkeeper and part of being a player and part of being a person, and maybe I'm trying to get better at dealing with certain things mentally like that, but it's, you know, as much experience as you can get, it still can be hard to deal with things, and losing them penalties is quite difficult to take, so I'm glad that didn't happen for us.
Yeah, we don't hear from Alan Manus too often, but I thought that was quite an interesting insight into the goalkeeping position, and certainly in terms of penalty kicks. But of course, a lot of people on social media last night, James, post-match, talking about the fact that Alan Manus didn't face the flag during Oran Navin. What's your take on that?
I think it's a nonsense. I think it's an absolute non-story. It's happened before. he doesn't have to face the flag. He doesn't want to face the flag. It's not disrespectful what he did. In fact, it's probably more respectful what he did than just completely ignoring it. We've had it in previous cup finals, FAI Cup final, Bowes versus Derry in the RDS. Sammy Morrow on that occasion did exactly what Alan did yesterday. He did it in the League Cup final as well down in Wexford. He did exactly what happened yesterday. To me, it's a non-story. We should just pass it off and just think about what happened yesterday as far as a good game of football.
Okay, we'll move on. Johnny, I said we'd get your thoughts on Shamrock Rovers going into 2020. Can they really now put it up to Dundalk? And where did they need to strengthen to really push Dundalk?
Well, after listening to Alan, Alan's put them under pressure now. They've got to go and win the league next year. But they won't be far off, I can tell you that.
Really? Okay.
I've seen a huge improvement in them. The way they reacted to the late goal from Dundalk as well, I thought it was brilliant. The character of them, the physicality of them, that they were able to last into the injury time. They stayed in the game. Taking Bourke off might have been, you know, they obviously thought he had the game won and could have done with him saying on. But look, great group of players they have there now. Talk about project, they're coming to the summit of it now, and I just think you asked me the question, they need a centre forward. And it's blindingly, it's there, it's in front of them. You know, between now and the start of the season, somebody in recruitment at Shamrock Rovers needs to be sent somewhere. I'm not saying England, it could be Europe or whatever it is. They need to come back with a centre forward or two, because Aaron Green has done brilliantly for them up top this season, but he probably needs a couple of chances to score. They need a fella with the instinct, the fox in the box fella.
I would agree with all that as well, Adrian. This was said at the start of the year, and I think it's been shown up then, and that's not taking anything away from Aaron Green, because I thought Aaron Green was the man of the match yesterday. I thought he was fantastic, because you're talking about them playing on the front foot and how aggressively they were pressing. That all comes from him, Aaron Green. He starts the whole thing off. He was hounding defenders. Like, I'd say he's an absolute nightmare to play against. And for what he lacks in that clinical finishing and getting you to 15, 20 goals, or as Johnny said, scoring after with maybe one or two chances, he more than makes up for it in his work rate, his effort, everything.
He's such a way out for them as well. Every time Jack Bourne got the ball with his head up, Green was already gone. He'd made, you know, so he was able to stretch teams, get in behind. And again, he's done great. But I really think that they need to go and get, if they want to move the team on to the next level, and I'm not just talking about winning the league, I'm talking about going well in Europe and getting into Europe. And
they're hard to get though, aren't they, Ed? Top class strikers.
Well, look at the top scorer this year. With
14 goals.
14 goals.
Junior.
Up in Derry got 14 as well. Like, sometimes these poacher, fox in the box types just don't fit in with the manager's viewpoint of how the game works and where the chances will come from. I think the way Stephen sets the team out, he's expecting players to come from deep goals, like the Burke, the Jack Byrne.
Well, McAniff got 11.
McAniff, yeah, like these lads, and they're coming, you let Aaron do the work or whatever. So like you say, Alan, Green was immense yesterday, but when you're doing that, when you're so frantic, I suppose, maybe it's harder to just
compose yourself for a finish, yeah.
Get that moment of composure to have that, you know.
Like the one we spoke about, the chance they have where Jack Byrne plays the lovely ball over the top, it's on his good side, he takes a decent first touch, yeah. He should score there, at least hit the target. That's the kind of example of, he takes three or four chances before he gets the goal, whereas a top quality clinical striker takes that down, bang, it's in net.
They have, what you're saying, Ed, I agree, they can come in off the line and score, they can cut them deep, they get goals from set pieces. Farrugia done well when he came on, he looked a bit nervous, so he's definitely going to add to the team going in an attacking sense. I definitely agree with that. But if they can get this centre forward, this is going to add to this team immensely, because if the other guys are chipping in with their goals, and if this fella is going to get you 15, if you say even 14 or 15 goals next season, this team is going to be formidable.
On the other side of that, the contrast to that, I was majorly disappointed with Pat Hooban yesterday, and I'm looking at Georgie Kelly coming off the bench, and I would have brought him on a lot. They were waiting, because I think they felt it was going into extra time,
yeah.
And then McAniff scores and they're just trying to get him on the pitch. But I would have brought him on a lot earlier, and I think they've underutilised him a little bit this season, because Hooban hasn't scored since the 26th of, I think it's August,
yeah,
weeks
it's a long
ago.
Time.
Out of his 13 goals this season as well, 7 of them have been penalties. So he hasn't been nowhere near. Like, he got 29 goals last year. To drop off 16 goals, like, it's a huge amount to drop off. And I've been a big fan of Pat, but for towards the latter part of the season, whatever's been going on, I don't know, was it because of the contract talks and stuff like that, interfered maybe a little bit with his form as well. But he's been majorly disappointing. And I felt yesterday Lopez absolutely out-muscled him, out-battled him, dominated him from start to finish.
I thought yesterday he might have actually gone with Georgie. I thought he might have started with Georgie.
And you look at the impact Georgie had when he came on. Like, and Johnny's saying, where are you going to get the centre-forward for Shamrock Rovers? I think Georgie Kelly is close to being the best centre-forward in the league.
I think he's very good. He's very imposing.
He needs to play. He needs to be playing on a regular basis.
So he's crushing Oban all the time, I think. But Oban needs to come back next year, I think, and up his game again, because Georgie Kelly must be breaking down that door.
Okay, they've only ever used him for like 10 minutes. Yeah. And that's just not enough time for to come on.
And he's certainly got his fair few. Yeah, he's got lots of goals.
And he has made impact. So imagine what he could do. Like,
well, let's get the Dundalk perspective. Let's hear from their boss, Vinnie Perth.
To win doubles or trebles, you've got to have everything to go your way, and today it just didn't. But we've had luck as well at different stages during the season. We just got to take that one on the chin and move on.
Players show great character to bring it to extra time, because it looked like a lost cause when Aaron McInniff tucked away the penalty.
Yeah, we just weren't our fluent self in terms of from an attacking threat. But I thought in extra time, obviously our fitness levels were far stronger, and we got control of the game back, which was very good for us, and very happy with that. And we've got to go again, dust ourselves down, get in tomorrow. Our season's not over. We've Linfield home and away over the next week. I said before the game, very proud to lead this club into this final. Very proud to lead it out of final as well. It's one of the great seasons of all time, and just disappointing it didn't go our way today.
But is it hurting the fact that you missed out on the treble, because it's such a difficult thing to achieve?
Yeah, it does. It's probably a lot of people will be quite happy. I know they're lighting candles in Derry, but I suppose it might have hurt a few people would have choked on their Sunday evening sandwiches if Vinnie Perth had done a treble. But look, that's just the way it goes. Everything has to go your way, and it just shows you how difficult it is to achieve that. So I suppose it's good for a lot of people that only the great Jim McLaughlin has done it, and I can live with that. You know, I can live with that. What a special man. So I take it on the chin.
He takes it on the chin, Johnny. The Chris Shields situation, I mean, they've got the Unite the Union Cup coming up against Linfield over two legs. But in the long, dark days of December and into January, Dundalk fans will be looking back at, you know, the treble that was lost and the cup final that was lost. The Shields situation, the card count, they got it wrong. And it's going to haunt them, surely, over the winter months.
Vinny is there from the football end of things, but you know, you have your spreadsheets in your office, you have your whiteboards up, your players, who your players are, your squad, your injuries, who's coming up for suspension. Well, that's where I would have had when I was at Pat's, and we'd have them all boxed off, and we'd know who's coming up for suspension and all that. So, but you know, the club as well, the secretary and people are, you know, the administration end of it. Vinny's new into this, he's been at Dundalk, obviously, with Stephen, but you've got to be on top of everything, and It shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened. It was a huge error on behalf of Dundalk, generally.
Contrast that with Shamrock Rovers, who had the same situation with Ronan Finn, who was one away, and they rested him against, was it UCD?
They managed it, yeah.
Do you think it's a ridiculous situation, though? Do you not think that to be banned from a cup final, my own personal point of view, unless you get sent off in your very last game of the season, you play the cup final. You want the best players on the pitch.
But they're the rules.
But I don't think yellow cards should knock anybody out from it.
I think it was eight.
I don't think yellow cards should suspend anybody from a cup final.
I think, to be fair to you can't be blaming the FAI and everything.
No, you can't. But I think that's just something. Like, it's unfair to say if it was you and you're sitting there and you're kind of going, I can't play in the cup final now.
Yeah, you'd
be
devastated.
But
it should be managed. I think it should have been managed better. And they're the ones that slipped up, and they've brought in the rule for the amnesty for five yellows. Like, where do you draw the line? Eight, in fairness, is a lot of yellow.
It's not like a second yellow for like a 50-50 challenge. It's just managing it.
I was talking to a player speaking about management, and he was talking to him on Friday night, and he was saying that coming up to a cup final a couple of years ago, he was one card away from being suspended, two games out. And he was told, you either go out and get your yellow card now, or you rest out the next two games. He was told, with two games left in the season, you're one card away from not playing that.
You were managing it. Like, that's proper administration end of
things.
Who
were you talking on Friday night, James?
But look, it was a major...
He once ran as Freddy the Fox, that's all I'm going to say.
I definitely think Shields would have definitely added to Dundalk. I mean, talk about Alan when he's on it. The big switch of play that he does, getting out to Duffy and getting out to Gannon. Gannon didn't ride as much down the right, but he knows exactly. And what he does really well for the team is, you talk about him being a holding midfielder and breaking down the play. The amount of free kicks he gets for the team, he's so clever. You know, he doesn't concede so many. He gets so many on him.
He didn't start 8 games this year, and there was a brilliant article, The Game of Two Halves, online there during the week. And they score less and concede fewer when he's, like, the stats prove. Now, it's not their only margin, little kind of, but it just goes to show the stats back up that one. And you look at him yesterday, and you can't be saying, making excuses, or that we're reliant on one player. But I said it beforehand, I think he's their best player. And it was sticking out like a sore thumb yesterday how much they missed
him. I met him in the stands. He was walking up and down. I was standing up in the middle section, and he's walking up and down. He's ash-faced. There's nil all. He said, I can't watch this, Johnny. I can't watch it. He said, I don't know how he has managed teams. He said, I cannot watch this match, he said.
Probably had his GPS on him still.
He was absolutely... he was petrified looking at
But overall, Dundalk, for all the plaudits we've given them over the years, and rightly so, they were very poor yesterday. Like, let's be honest.
Well, here's the question for you, Alan, because we asked, what do Shamrock Rovers need to do to really challenge Dundalk? What do Dundalk now need to do to push clear of Shamrock Rovers and to progress in Europe, because all the talk in the new year will be about the league title and Europe? Where are they lacking, or where do they need to improve now?
I think it's good for them as well that,
admittedly, a quality side, when I say where they're lacking.
Like, we're nitpicking, really, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Like, let's be honest. But I think, to be fair to them as well, obviously you don't want to lose cup finals, but as I said, I think it's good for league that Shamrock Rovers won yesterday. And it might be a little bit of a, not a wake up call, that's the wrong kind of phrase, or a bit of a kick up the backside for Dundalk, and they realise we need to up our game again next year, because Shamrock Rovers are hot on our tails now. In terms of where they need to improve, like, you look at their back four, it's as good around as anything around, in my opinion. You have Shields in that midfield with the options that they have. It's still as good as anything's that's around, the best. Like, the one thing for next year, I think Georgie Kelly's going to be massive for them next year, and that's what I'm saying about Hooban, the drop off in his form. He needs to have a serious look now in the off season and think, like, this fella is like, he's basically going to take my jersey if I don't kind of up at another level next year. And I think that might be good for Pat Hooban as well, because Georgie Kelly, I think, is ready to overtake him now at this stage, and he could have a huge season for them next year. But as I say, they'll come back, they'll obviously rest off for the off season. They'll come back ready and rearing to go as well. And they'll know that they'll have a fight on their hands now, because I think Shamrock Rovers are ready to challenge them.
I agree with you, Alan, on that. And the point you asked about, I think Dundalk might be coming to where the peak. I really do. And they're still going to be there and thereabouts next year. I think Shamrock Rovers are just starting the momentum now. Really do. And I think there's a few years in this Shamrock Rovers team. I don't think there's still a few years left in the Dundalk
team. The recruitment, Johnny, might be big, because you're probably looking at the squad now, Adrian, as well, and you're saying where they need to improve. He probably might need to offload three or four as well. And
I'm sure he has his recruitment in mind. With that team, I just think Rovers have the momentum now and for the next few years.
Okay, we'll come to your team of the year very shortly. But of course, the women's final was quite a thriller as well. Wexford retaining the Women's Cup, beating Piemont by 3-2, so no double for Piemont. Lauren Kelly named player of the match. She scored twice. And Kylie Murphy, the Wexford captain, with the winner.
Oh, great day all round. Absolutely buzzing. I can't even tell you what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah, and for the likes of Lauren Kelly, a young player getting 2 in a cup final, the stuff of dreams.
Absolutely. Do you know, I think the calmness out of both of her goals were just incredible. Do you know, sometimes when you get so high up the pitch and you get a chance to have a shot, we tend to kind of blast it, but she couldn't have been any more composed. And she's like that in life in general. She's so relaxed and so laid back, and it was incredible. The 2 goals were fantastic.
You were pretty composed yourself for what proved to be the winner.
Yeah, look, I'm really thankful it went in. Ree gave me a fantastic ball. She seen me coming through. Tom spoke all week about having late runners in the box, and just get there and get your legs to get you there. And if we can do that, we will create chances. And look, I just seen the opening. Rihanna pulled the centre half out and I could just see the gap. And thankfully, I took a good touch and it went in, you know.
In terms of the league, you finished well behind Piemont United, who were crowned champions. So to get across the line today and win some silverware, that was very important for Wexford Youths.
Yeah, well, it was, because obviously on the back of winning a treble last year, and then we were coming into this game having no silverware at all, you know, and that for Wexford and that for us and the team that we are is just not good enough. Just not good enough. We're here to win trophies, you know. So we spoke earlier on and said that Piemont are fantastic, and we knew that it wasn't going to take 100%, it was going to take 110% from every player, every person in the squad, our whole management team, subs, everybody. It was going to take everything to beat them, and thankfully we did.
There you go, that's Kylie Murphy, the skipper of Wexford Youths, after their 3-2 win over Piemont in Sunday's final. Alan, you watched it, it was quite a thrilling game. Yeah. 5 goals.
Good, exciting game. Adrian, yeah, good goals. Lots of action. Probably one of the better cup finals that we've seen in recent times as well. And yeah, good luck to Wexford Utes. I thought they deserved it on the day to play quite well. And the winning goal from Kylie was absolutely brilliant. Lovely little pass from Rhianna Jarrett. And she tucked it away nicely. Rhianna Jarrett was very good on the day as well. And yeah, the fact that they obviously didn't win the league, but they won the cup last year, it's good for Wexford that they retained the cup. But I'm sure Piemont will be bitterly disappointed because they had such a good league campaign.
Yeah.
Everybody fancied them to go on and win the cup, so it's probably a major disappointment for them.
Ed, you were reporting on it. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, my main thought was that it was the wrong date in the calendar for the match, because anyone who was there for both matches was, you know, it was a bit of a grind, to be honest with you, just to get through the two games and then a full 2-hour break essentially between matches. And like, the crowd was paltry enough for what turned up for the women's final. Well, if you had that match up in Tallaght Stadium as a unique event, you know, it'll be like a women's international match, and you'd be looking at 4,000 or 5,000.
And the debate is, and it is a debate, but I actually see both sides of the argument, and I would agree largely with Ed. I think it should be a standalone because you're trying to grow the women's game here, and everybody is, and there's a big improvement on it, and the women's international team are doing well and all that stuff, and I get all that. Yeah. And I'm for all that, and you want to kind of help them develop and improve it, but having the game in the Aviva Stadium
at 5 past 12
in front of nobody, I don't think it does the girls any good in terms
as
of
much
growing,
as they want to play
in terms
there
of growing the game. And the argument I get back from the girls is, and I totally get this as well, is that, well, it's the Aviva Stadium, we want to play there, and I totally hear that and understand that, and that's fine. But just in terms of the bigger picture of growing the game, if you're sitting at home yesterday and you're flicking on and you're looking at that, I don't think it's doing them any favours. Whereas Zed says, if you were flicking on a Saturday night and it was the cup finals weekend and you had the women's one on a Saturday night in Tallaght,
and under lights,
6,000 people, and the optics of it straight away, it looks like, oh, this is a big, huge event, this is great. Like
the women's
but
hockey.
But year on year, it's definitely improving. Absolutely definitely improving. I was listening, Sue Ronan is doing some great works at the grass levels, and they're trying to create better pathways. And we talk about players, the best players, like going away to England and going to America and all that type of stuff. But it's going to take a few years for them to build. But year on year, it's definitely improving.
But the mad thing about it is, you look yesterday, you're talking about not playing the game there. Niamh Fahey was on our panel yesterday. Liverpool vice captain, international for I don't know how many caps, has never played in the Aviva. But as a senior international, to that, to me, is a bit of I don't really get that, why someone can get to that level in international football, never play there.
Would you have the international matches then in the Aviva?
I think so. Even once, one off, not all in Tallaght, maybe have the one there, the start of a campaign there, or a big game there, or something like that. Because I think it's sad that our internationals, for instance, never get to play in the Aviva Stadium.
I think on a more positive note, in terms of what the players can now see, if you look at last year's cup final, same two teams were playing. Amber Barrett's gone, and like, her progress over even 6 months from that cup final to signing for the Germans at Cologne, she's become a completely different player. Rhianna Jarrett yesterday, her performance compared to 12 months ago, she's come on as a outstanding player.
Is that down to better support structures around the ladies or the women's players, better coaches around them, better facilities? So I'm sure that all adds to it as well. And you know, as I said, the pathways are definitely getting put in place for them.
James, we'll have a bit of a debate, I'm sure, at some stage about manager of the year. I think you're on record as going for Keith Long, but Ollie Horgan as an outside bet, what an achievement by Finn Harps, seeing off Drogheda by 2-0 in the second leg. Drogheda missing out on promotion, but Finn Harps retaining their place in the Premier Division. You were there.
Yeah, it was a really good night Friday night. It did look like the Ploughing Championships have taken place before the match on the pitch. It was a quite interesting photograph from the Finn Harps PRO or something like that. Had a picture of the pitch saying, pitch is looking in great condition. And we were looking and coming on, that was probably taken 6 months ago. Definitely not tonight. Pitch was absolutely appalling, but they went into the game 1-0 down. They needed to get the early goal. They got the early goal and they settled down a lot, and they played first half, they were really, really good. And then at half time, Adam Wickstead comes on and changes it for Drogheda. Gets on the front foot. Drogheda have a load of really, really good chances. Could well have nicked it before the end of full time to get that goal. Goes to extra time. And then Harry Ashcroft, as he does, has a couple of times this season
I've
already
seen him really
scored
good.
Some
yeah.
big, big goals for Finn Harp. Scored against Derry City.
I've seen him down in Waterford. Got really, really good impressive goals. In yeah. that match, yeah.
Gets the header. The header just spins off what is now a quagmire. It's not even a pitch at that stage. Everything's gone. The pitch is in bits. The rain is hammering down. And Ollie, in typical Ollie fashion, comes off after the end of the match. One of his biggest career moments, keeping him in the Premier Division, says, "We didn't deserve to win it." only Ollie can.
And we're going to struggle in 2020.
yeah. But it's, yeah, it was a great night. It was a good crowd. It was lashing rain.
But it's good for the Northwest. You yeah. Sligo, Finn Harps, Derry. You know, it's mm. it's there good was, that it keeps it.
There's no question that 27 miles away, there was a chairman dancing a jolly jig yeah. in the brandy yeah, well, thinking we have this game back next yeah. year.
The only thing, and I get all that as well, but they're like, where's the progression for Finn Harps? You know, like, it's they're coming up, they're struggling, they're facing a playoff. This is going on now for the last three. Like, where yeah. can you see that any kind of signs of improvement?
Personally,
and
I think
I've so much time for Ollie yeah. and all that kind of stuff, and he's a great character to have in the league. I get all that, but how long can it just go on that you're
firefighting
just,
all the
yeah,
time?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, personally, I think the bottom two should be relegated out of the Premier Division, and there should be a definite two places for the First Division to fight out for. And Drogheda shouldn't have had to go 1 5 weeks yeah. before they played a match to get into this game, and then have to play four matches to try and get into that.
But you can't give out about Finn Harps saying they don't have the standard to stay in the Premier Division.
Stay there.
And then stay there. The team that you think should replace them can't beat them over two legs. So, you yeah. know, that's the test. And if those teams come
up, I'm not saying they don't have the standard. I'm just yeah. saying it's a constant struggle all the time. Yeah.
And that's the way it is. But that's the way for
some clubs. Some clubs need that. They might need that. They might be doing a lot of work off the, you know, with their youth, with their academy. Look at Sligo Rovers. Like, Sligo Rovers haven't done anything since they won, you know, all that stuff with
hold on a minute now. Yeah.
I'm coming.
It's a project.
There is a compliment coming.
Put your FEI Cup hat on you.
Look at the work. Sligo Rovers got the European money and they invested in the club. The facilities are second to none. And they took a stand from what looked like they said they sacrificed that bit of glory to focus on the club. And I think it stands to them. And you could even see in the second half of the season, I think they're starting to show a bit more of their potential.
Well, we'll get to that, I suppose, the little summary on the clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do now. The PFAI team of the season, I'll run through it and you can tell me, would you go with that team or who you'd have in or who you might change? So the team of the year, I'll run through it because we'll be here for an hour and a half. Alan Manus in goal. They went for Sean Gannon at right back, Sean Hoare, Lee Grace of Shamrock Rovers, Sean Kavanagh as a left back, Danny Mandrow and Chris Shields, Jack Byrne, Michael Duffy on the left, David Parkhouse and Patrick Hooban. That's the 1-11. And the Player of the Year nominations, Michael Duffy, Sean Gannon, Jack Byrne. And the Young Player of the Year nominations, Danny Mandrow of Bowes, David Parkhouse of Derry and Jack Byrne of Shamrock Rovers. I'll start with Johnny Mack. Would you have any dispute over that? I mean, it's a fairly strong 11.
It is a strong 11, but I thought James Tauber had a great season for Bowes. I really did. Be my alternative. There's a few. Like, Gannon stand out alone, best right full by miles. Young Andy Lyons is a fella for the future. Bowes, the right full, young player, under-19 international. Yeah.
Will he play now that Pender's retired?
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying. So he's one I'd be looking at. Centre-halves, James Finnegan at Bowes, for me, impressed over the season. Again, it's an alternative. I think Sean Hoare would be a centre half for me. And definitely go with Sean Kavanagh. Mandrew coming through. I would say Mandrew, okay. Me wide players, I would definitely go with Duffy. Absolutely. I'd stick Green on the other side for coming in on his left. You know, the way Duffy comes in on his right. I'd like Parkhouse up top. I liked him, seen him. And I know he's only on loan. He's come in. I don't know if he's signed full time. But midfield, I love Aaron McAniff, love him, absolutely love him in there. Obviously Jack Bourne is in there as well, and I like O'Neill, so yeah, that's kind of 11 or 12 that I would have put in.
That's a Gaelic squad.
Yeah, it's 11. I put O'Neill in there. I know Jack Bourne is there, Mandrew. I definitely would have Aaron McAniff in there. I definitely would have him in there. Jack Bourne, and you know, obviously we know Chris Shields, but I'm just going for the alternative.
Sure,
flesh,
sure, absolutely, yeah. And Alan, you, yeah. Darragh Leahy, yeah. The kids from at left back.
Yeah, that's a strong, the PFI team is a strong team, but there's a couple of alternatives. I would have went for Manus. I agree with that. I'm a big fan of Manus. I think he's a great goalkeeper.
And yet a lot of people on social media were saying it had to be Talbot or Rodgers.
I think Talbot, like Johnny said, I think Talbot's done really well, and Gary has had a good season. But I just think Manus has made such a difference to Shamrock Rovers towards the end of last season and again this season. And I've probably watched more of Shamrock Rovers than any club this season, and I've a lot of Bohemians. But anytime I've seen Manus, and it's not just him as a goalkeeper, it's what he gives to the back four as well, and the assurance that they have someone reliable behind him as well. I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper. Sean Gannon at right full. Mad about Sean. Daniel Cleary, I'm a big fan of. I think he should have been in the PFEI team. Sean Hoare, I'd go for alongside him. I think they have a brilliant partnership. And again, I think, even though I thought Brian Gartland played quite well yesterday, that partnership that was disrupted for the cup final yesterday of Hoare and Cleary, I think that was a major problem for Dundalk as well, because I think they're the best two in the league. Darragh Leahy, I would go for at left full instead of Sean Kavanagh, under 21 international. I think he's a great player. I think he has a real chance of maybe going on and playing further as well. Midfield, Chris Shields, Jack Byrne, who's been very good, as we know. Mandrew, I'm mad about Mandrew. I really am. I think he's a brilliant player. And up front, slightly different as well. Duffy, definitely. I'm a big fan of Duffy. But I would go for Parkhouse also. I think he's had a brilliant season, had a huge impact for Derry. And I'd also go for the young boy that nobody's mentioned, and he's been the top scorer in the league, Junior.
I was going to say, yeah.
And that's my team. And that's the there's three or four alternatives to the PFI team, but that's
so Junior's point. In your 11, I'm sure, James.
Yeah, Junior's in mine, definitely. You can't, I don't think you can have a league team of the year that you don't have the top goal scorer in the league, in it. Like, do you know what I mean? Very few, exactly what Alan said. The only one really, apart from Alan, is that left back. Would it be Darragh Leahy? Or one that I have been impressed with, and to tell you the truth, when he signed, I was a bit iffy about, was Kieran Coll.
Yeah, he's done well.
He's done really, really well. Oh, he looked terrific. The shocking terrific challenge that went in on him early in the season.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
We thought his leg was broken. It's been brilliant. Manus, outstanding goalkeeper. Proved it yesterday. Just brilliant. Settled down Rovers. Top two, Hoban, Parkhouse. Probably Aaron Green or Georgie Kelly could get in there as well.
Romeo Parks?
And them two.
Romeo Parks, Romeo, good challenge, yeah.
Yeah, good season as well. Like, but yeah.
They're alternatives. Like, yeah. It's great that there's so many alternatives from different people. There's so many good young players around the league.
This time of the season used to do my head in on Soccer Republic, because I used to have to go after these guys, ask them for their team of the season, and every single year it was a pain, because they'd all
would
have 4-1-1s, 4-2-3s.
They'd have, give it to you very
one of them used to give me subs.
If you looked at the PFAI team, and you sort of look at the who's missing from the Rovers and Dundalk teams, and why aren't they in there? There's sort of a good reason for why, you know, certain, like McEnough missed a section for true injury. There's always there's a reason sort of why most of them are left out, because you're picking from the cream of the crop. I thought Rodgers is probably, you know, he came in with a lot of criticism as possibly a weak link in the Dundalk team over the years, you know, and I think he's back to his best. I thought he was exceptional yesterday. I don't think he's better than Manus, but I think he's back to playing a very confident level of goalkeeping. And I think then just with the Rovers back three of O'Brien, Lopez and Grace, I think the reason Grace is in is because he's playing alongside those two boys, and the three of them work so well together. And I could easily have Joey O'Brien or Lopez.
I think Joey O'Brien's had a great season, and he's added so much to Shamrock Rovers too. Any game you see him play, because he missed a lot of last year, and the experience that he provides, and there's a bit of devilment in him as well. You saw that yesterday with the little thing on the sideline and all. And I've no problem with that.
Yeah.
I think he's been really good, Joey O'Brien.
You do look then, like, obviously you try to look away from the top two teams. You look down through the teams of what player has maybe stood out. And, like, Lewis Banks at Sligo, I know, has had a great season.
Great show.
You know, and like, he's even been playing out of position as well. He's been
just
playing,
won the player of the year, hasn't he? For
yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, he's a great shot. And, like, obviously a few young lads coming through, like Zaki Abazetti.
Yeah, Figueroa at Watford also.
Figueroa, I think if he had to come in early, Watford would have been a completely different outfit.
Sure, why don't we have two teams?
Well, that's the way it is. Trust me, that's the way it used to feel on Soccer Republic.
One thing I would say about the team that the PFAI picked is that I wouldn't have Sean Kavanagh as a left back if it was a wing back. I think he is so underrated. Like, obviously he's getting the recognition, but I just think people don't see what he does.
Technically, he's very good.
He's just so safe and neat and tidy.
And we'll just go around the table. Really, just want one word answers on the player of the year. Alan, you were lauding praise on Sean Gannon. Is he going to be your man?
Sean Gannon's my man,
in the last few weeks.
I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I thought he had one of his poorer games yesterday, but that was due to the fact that the whole team didn't function really. But I think over the year he's been absolutely brilliant, so Sean Gannon's my player.
I think Duffy's been just so consistent.
Yeah, I'm with you on Duffy, so that's two for Duffy.
So consistent.
Ed?
Jack Byrne for me.
Shock.
Shock horror.
Jack Byrne for me as well.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I think it's, every time he touches the ball, the crowd, and everybody kind of goes, oh.
He's classy.
Builds it up. Yeah. I think Jack Byrne for me.
Okay. We've done moments of the year so far to an extent. You mentioned the cup final yesterday, Johnny, is your moment of the year. I will kind of go along with that. The FAI Cup semi-finals were brilliant. Daly Mount Park, the Showgrounds. I see the cup because the league was largely a procession for Dundalk.
But the whole day, as I said earlier on, it was just brilliant yesterday. You know, just to go to the game, the atmosphere, going, travelling up to the game, being there early, the march up at the White Horse from Ringsend, I've seen the stuff on video. Brilliant occasion, and even the weather was great on the day.
And I guess it's your moment of the year as well, isn't it?
The whole thing, and if you look over the last few years at who's been in the cup final, it's the best teams and it shows, because the players remember these days. And so when it comes to the first, second round matches, you know, away to Finn Harps, down in Galway, whatever, like, they're probably a bit more clued in now. Like, we can't lose this. We want to be going to the Aviva, at the end of the year. But my moment, I suppose, is a moment within a moment, and it was Stephen Bradley's team talk that he was giving. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but the camera zoomed in on him. It was a circle, half time and extra time. And he went and he hit them all, and he went all the way around. He turned to every single player, and I asked him in the press conference afterwards what was going on. He said, look, he just thought that the first 5-10 minutes of the extra time, that it was still, that late equaliser was probably still playing on their mind, and he just wanted to reset,
refocus,
trust each other, trust the game plan, trust each other, relax.
I thought he was asking the lads, what do you think of my shoes that he was wearing with the suit?
Yeah.
that was interesting. You could actually hear a bit of it on the telly last night when he was doing that chat. And when he finished the chat with the group, he broke away and he grabbed Aaron Green to himself, and he got Aaron Green into a bit of a hug and gave him an extra bit as well just before he went back out.
What I did want to say as well, it was a great occasion for the club, and the 32-year thing was a big thing. I think equally it was a huge occasion for Stephen and what he's doing and what they're doing behind the scenes at Rovers, and that justification. And he said himself, the team needed that to go on to do what Dundalk do, because Dundalk don't, you know, you win and then you can go on with more, and it's a habit.
And you're right, Ed, because you can tell, you can say, I told you so, we believed we could do this, we've got here. Whether it was down to penalties or not, but even to the club, you know, to the people, the back in the club.
My moment, Adrian, is, and I'm kind of with you as well, I think the league has been a bit of a disappointment for large periods, and the highlights for me have been the Dublin derbies with Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians. I've gone to every one of them, went to the cup semi-final. They're just brilliant occasions, and the fact that Bowes performed so well, I think, adds to it. I don't know if the derbies are as hyped up or as good when maybe one of them is ninth or eighth and the other one is at the top of the table. The fact that they're so close in the table, there's very little between the teams. Bowes have had an unbelievable run in the derbies, as we all know, and them as occasions. If we could have one of those fixtures in the league every week, because just the hype around them and the talk, it's great for the league. So they've been my kind of moment all year, the four Dublin derbies.
Mr. O'Toole?
I think the night that Bohemian secured Europe, I thought it was a great night for Bohs. I thought it was a great night for the
atmosphere
team.
Was good.
The atmosphere was brilliant.
Big crowd.
I think two great moments. Bohs securing Europe, Derry securing Europe. Those two moments.
You did
of the
have
week.
To mention Derry.
They were, of course I did. They were great moments. And then if we go back to the cup finals yesterday, I think, as a person, Rhianna Jarrett, I think her performance yesterday and her goal for Ireland as well, that was a great moment.
Sorry, Adrian. Right. Derek Pender as well, scoring a goal on his last game. I'm mad.
He had the fight for the ball.
I'm mad about Derek. He's a great lad, as we all know. He's rock solid. He's the type of fella that you would want on your side. I played with him when he was a young lad, young fella at Bray, when he was a young fella at Shells, Johnny, had him. And the career that he's had, and as you say, you couldn't meet a nicer lad. And to be fair, that's something that should be said for all the lads amongst the league. You meet a lot of our players in the league, and they're the best young fellas and best young lads. They're all great kids. But Derek Pender in particular, I'm kind of disappointed that I still think he has plenty to offer. And the fact that they're in Europe, I thought he'd give it one more year. But that's another moment. The fact that he went out on such a high, scoring the penalty and running out to the crowd, I thought it was just
Johnny
brilliant.
Has a roguish smile going, what are you going to say?
I know Derek pretty well. And I know his family. I know from a long time since he was a young lad playing up out there. But yesterday, I was getting up to the game early, and I had some spare tickets, and those four English lads looking around to see could he, where they could buy tickets. They were obviously over for the weekend. I heard
you're buying and selling tickets yesterday.
He was walking in front of the white horse with the tickets.
I don't. I said, lads, he's looking for tickets yet. I said, there you are. Enjoy the match. So I hope they enjoy the match. Before new supporters.
Well done,
brilliant. Great. Fair play.
Turned out to a hockey tickets.
I tell you what. Let's
good as well.
Yeah. Let's run the rule over the teams in the Premier Division. I tell you what. We'll skip past Dundalk because we've been, and Shamrock Rovers, and in fact Bowes and Derry, because we know they all had excellent seasons, all making Europe, and Dundalk champions, Shamrock Rovers winning the cup. So to fifth place, and we'll keep this one moving around the table. St Patrick's Athletic, when they look back at 2019, Alan,
I think they'll be disappointed, because at the start of the year, bar the top two, I think there was a real opportunity for teams such as Pats, Bowes, Waterford, Cork, all to be vying for that kind of European slots. And Pats would have definitely fancied their chances with the investment and the players. There was a lot of hype around St. Pat's at the start of the year, signing Reese McCabe, Chris Forrester. I actually thought they had the makings of a really good team. And I was disappointed for Harry as well, because I really like Harry, and it just didn't pan out for him for whatever reason. I think with Stephen O'Donnell going in, I think Stephen will demand a whole lot more from that group. I think he's already slashed five or six of them from the squad, and he needs to probably do a little bit of a clear out, and he'll put his own imprint on things. So I'd be expecting a really positive season from Pats, because as I say, bar the top two, and I know Bowes and Derry have done well this year, I think there's much of a muchness between the other teams, and there's a real opportunity for the Sligo Rovers, Pats, whoever it is, from that kind of third place down to maybe seventh or eighth, for any of them to be fighting out for those European positions. So I think they'll be disappointed overall, Pats, with their season, but I'm hoping Stephen does well for them next year.
Okay, we'll keep it moving. Waterford for you, Johnny, in sixth position.
Yeah, I think
the Europe thing really
knocked
them back.
Yeah, I think so.
Back,
that's
it?
A point I was going to make. I think the carpet was pulled right from under them when they expected to be getting into Europe, and I think the owner backed off a bit. So, and there was a bit of disarray around the place, facilities, pitch, all that. They, you know, if they're going well, they get supporters, but they just need to reinvent themselves for next season. And they had some really good patches during the season where they played really well, and a few players coming through. Where the players coming in on loan, there was a lot of players in on loan, so they kind of need to just stabilise the place and, you know, just kind of finish in that mid-table, and it might take them a year or so to get back challenging for Europe again.
James, I'm going to give you Sligo Rovers finishing in seventh.
Up and down year, I think losing the two lads, Parks and that, to European qualifiers and world qualifiers as well, kind of disrupt them in the middle where they lost a couple of the internationals. In fairness to Liam, he's kind of settled the ship. The last couple of years, they've been waiting to the last two or three games to get away from relegation. So Liam settled the ship there, definitely. The fans are still behind him. And I think with the right, again, we're all talking about recruitment, but one or two good players in there could see them push. I think they'll be safe again next year. Will they push for Europe? I'm not too sure.
Okay. Cork City finished eighth. Neil Fenn with a big challenge ahead of him, Ed.
Yeah, like Cork City's season is just, it's really just shocked everyone, really. Like,
in terms of the smug Shamrock Rovers fan. No.
I'll tell you, when Cork City are doing well and you go to an away match in Turner's Cross, there is no better place in Ireland to be at a football match. It's just brilliant to be an away fan in Turner's Cross, a packed Turner's Cross. So it's disappointing to see Cork City. Obviously, Shamrock Rovers are thinking, well, if we finish ahead of the Cork City, we'll do okay.
Alan, I'm going to give you both Finn Harps in ninth and UCD in 10th. You already referenced Finn Harps and the almost annual struggle.
Yeah, and it is. And I know, like, maybe resources-wise, they're obviously nowhere near the levels of some of the other clubs and all, and Ollie just does great to just keep the kind of show on the road, I would say. But I don't know how good it is for them that you're just basically coming up every year and finishing ninth and having to wait for a playoff to stay in the division. I would like to see some sort of progress be made, like, other than that, and I'm not sure if it is being made. And I actually, going into the playoff, I think, and again, I'm a fan of Ollie, but I think Drogheda would have been a much better addition to the league than Finn Harps in the current state that they're in.
And UCD?
I think UCD have just been, like, this argument crops up about should they be in the league and stuff. The way they were this year, no, I don't think so. So I'm not sorry to see UCD go at all.
And before we wrap things up, Johnny, Shelburne promoted.
Oh, it's going to be huge. They're going to bring a great buzz to the league. The fans are going to come back out for Shells. They're going to have big crowds. I don't know about this. talk of practice, talk about the old stand, the stuff going wrong in the old stand. So we don't know what, you know, the capacity of talk is going to be. But yes, they, and the good thing about Shelbourne is being the Dublin team, they're going to attract players and there'll be a little bit of investment there. And I think Shelbourne coming up is a huge plus. And I think they'll be safe next year. I think they'll be fine.
Okay. One other big story just before we do wrap things up, the All-Ireland League. Is it in trouble now, James, given the fact that the Irish Football Association will not sanction any of its member clubs to take part in any potential All-Ireland League?
I don't know if it is in trouble. I think from Kieran Lucid and his group's point of view, I think they probably would have seen this coming before they put anything down. The IFA were going to be... Their stumbling blocks, realistically, were going to be the IFA, the FEI and UEFA. The clubs seem all behind it from the meeting.
Pretty big stumbling blocks.
But that's the thing, but the FEI seem on board with it.
Yeah, they do.
UEFA seem on board with it because they're letting the Belgium and
Dutch,
League
you're right,
progress what they were doing. So it was the IFA. I think Kieran Lucid and his group probably knew this was coming. I'm sure they will push on with it still and see if they can just get the clubs to break away from
what do you think,
what they're doing.
Well, I know, having spoken to Kieran recently, that they are going to push on, and you know, he didn't say that they were expecting this or anything like that, but the plan is still in place and it's really progressed over the last 6 months, you know, compared to what it was at the, you know, a year and a half ago. It was like a vision even, but now like it they're getting consultants in, they're getting great work behind it. You know, for a lot of fans who are looking for better teams and better matches, like you spoke about, imagine Rovers Bowes match every week. Well, it would be if there was Linfield and Glentoran, and if there was Rovers Linfield or Cork Linfield or whatever, you know. So like, why wouldn't they just try it out if you can get the if you can sanction it? Like the IFA are off, I imagine are going to be wary of, you know, this leading to an All Ireland international team, and whether or not UEFA make, you know, start.
Yeah, the door is open.
So like, you know, that would, and that's always going to be a risk, and clubs would know that as well. But essentially, and it's one thing we've always said about League of Ireland clubs, and I'm sure it's the same with Irish League clubs, each club looks after their own business first, and if it's good for them, they'll go for it, and if it's not good for them, they'll, you know.
I think the top teams up there are really for this. I really do. And what I'm hearing through the grapevine, Dave Healy was down to the cup final yesterday. I'm sure he looked at me. I'd love a bit of this action here. And I think it can only be good. I really do. I think it can only be good.
To try and shut it down without really exploring it to the nth degree, I think is probably a bit premature on their behalf. But I actually looked at the statement and I thought, I looked from our point of view here in the league, and obviously all the controversies that's gone on this year in terms of the FEI, and I actually thought it's such a sad indictment on our league that they were almost brushing us aside, that our league is better than yours. They used words like progressive, we've a balanced league, almost to say, ye sort out the mess that's down there before you even think about coming up here to us, kind of thing. And I actually thought, and you know what, I thought, if that's the way they feel about their league and they feel as though they're putting structures in place and things are on the right road, and they talked about attendance is improvement and of a broadcast deal and different things in place to whatever relative level it is up there, and more or less saying, like, you're a mess and you're a shambles down there. And we need to look closer from home, because we kind of are a little bit. The league is a bit of a mess.
I think there's a good balanced article. I think Keith Bailey's wrote one during the week from the Northern Irish perspective on what the pros and cons are of it. And I think that kind of nailed it down, where there was a lot of worry about it being top-heavy League of Ireland compared
every
to...
Every league in the world is top-heavy.
Yeah.
No, but, clubs.
Do you know what I mean? Clubs, yeah, yeah. Like, so I think there is a lot of scepticism about it from certain clubs in the north. From the clubs I've spoken to, as you said, the likes of Linfield, the likes of Glentoran, Crusaders, Larne, all behind it. But there will be a couple of clubs who just won't like it.
All right, we'll see what happens. Ed, where are the celebrations tonight? Ongoing, I'm sure, for you.
I'll be in RTE till midnight.
You'll only be getting going again.
Check out all the latest news on the RTE website.
I'm on my way to Nerka tomorrow for a few days' break, a winter break.
Selling all those tickets.
From selling.
And on that dubious note, we will be back next week. Until then, bye-bye.